You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
It's time to drop the puck. Time for the Nightcap. Your home for news and insider info on your Vegas Golden Knights and the NHL. Let's hear from the goalie. Here's Lindsey Brown.
Hey, how are you? Welcome to another installment of the Nightcap. We appreciate you choosing to join us to talk some Golden Knights hockey tonight on the CBS Sports Radio 1140 Signal or streaming on that radio.com app. Make sure you download that if you haven't done so already. My name is Lindsey Brown, your host always and forever. And tonight, like Jason Derulo, I am riding solo. But on the other side of the first break here, we are going to be joined by none other than the man, the myth, the legend, the former OG of the Nightcap, Ryan Quigley, who covers the Minnesota Wild for SB Nation. Your Golden Knights are going to be facing off against those Minnesota Wild tomorrow night. And just by happenstance, the Wild just made a huge trade with the Pittsburgh Penguins. So we're very fortunate to have Ryan scheduled to be on with us tonight. So we'll be able to break that down for you pretty much as this thing is breaking, because we just found out about that about 20 minutes ago or so. Like I said, he's going to be calling us from his homeland to preview tomorrow night's matchup and discuss that trade. But now that we've addressed that, as Shang from Mulan always said, let's get down to business. As we always do on the Nightcap to start our first segment here, we kind of recap what the week was that the Golden Knights just completed. Your Golden Knights had three games last week against Tampa Bay, Florida, and Carolina. Let's just start with that Tampa Bay Lightning game, shall we? That's a 4-2 loss to the Lightning. Now, the Lightning, they're a good team. They're an excellent team. They're one of the teams that everybody kind of expects to be in the playoffs. They were definitely a favorite to win the Stanley Cup last year, as they were one of the strongest records that we had seen in the better part of the last few decades. And they ended up losing in the first round of those Columbus Blue Jackets. But they have refound their game this season and have absolutely been steamrolling their competition as of late. And they did that very same thing to your Golden Knights. And you don't fault that loss. You're in their building and a team that's running hot and a team that's has a lot of talent on their team. So there's nothing to see there, nothing to do. So next, moving on, they went and had a 7-2 convincing victory over the Florida Panthers in their building. But the game was a lot closer than the score actually indicates. It was a pretty tightly contested game through most of the second period. Mark Stone really just put the team on his back and getting 5 points in that contest before that thing really broke open in the third period. Nate Schmidt leading off the scoring in that third period, and I think on the first shift, actually. And Sergei Bobrovsky, as good of a goaltender as he is, a two-time Vezina winner and on a brand new, I think, $70 million contract, just has yet to find his footing in Florida this year, just got absolutely steamrolled and was pulled with about 10 minutes left in the third period. The Golden Knights go on to win that game 7-2, and that would wrap up the longest road trip of all time. They were gone for basically the whole month of January, and they returned to face off against the Carolina Hurricanes this past Saturday. And it was all fun and games, Mark. It really was, through like the first and most of the second period. Did you watch any of that game?
Which one again? I'm sorry.
The Carolina game on Saturday.
Yes.
You did watch?
Yes.
Were you pleased?
Well, I mean, they were playing. It seemed like they were playing well.
Right. They were.
Definitely.
They were playing well. And then it went not well very quickly.
Yeah, and then things just went sideways all of a sudden.
Yeah.
It
was just not good. And the Golden Knights were bringing a 3-1 lead into the third period, and they were playing really well. I mean, the Lions were scoring. Mark Stone and Max Pacioretty were doing what they have been doing all season, which is basically just scoring goals and taking names. But Marc-Andre Fleury, who has struggled at different points of the season, was definitely not having his best game against those Carolina Hurricanes. As I said, that 3-1 lead quickly evaporated. They end up losing in that shootout. And we'll explore a little bit more about Marc-Andre Fleury and that performance from that team in general, because I think it's important to kind of break this one down, because we've seen games where they've given up and blown leads, and we've seen games where they've come back from leads or at least being down by a bunch of goals. That happened in their game against St. Louis a few weeks ago, and that's a team that they're going to actually face next week here too, but we'll preview that later on. But in terms of that third period, in terms of Marc-Andre Fleury and what kind of position the Golden Knights find themselves in at this point in time, because that Carolina game is very much indicative of what this team kind of has been this season, and that's topsy-turvy, to be totally honest. And that third period, to start out that period so early, to be giving up a goal just a minute and a half, less than a minute and a half into that period, that sets the tone. And the tone setting is something that I really want to focus on, because I don't know if anybody else has noticed. I don't know if you've noticed, Mark, but since Peter DeBoer has taken over, and last night is the example, he has started the fourth line for the opening shift at the beginning of the game, because the fourth line, and specifically the Golden Knights' fourth line, that being Ryan Reeves, Will Carrier, I mean, you have Nicholas Waugh there, you have Thomas Nosek who's there. They forecheck. They are the grind line. They are the guys that you send out to set the tone, because they are going to hit you. They are going to forecheck all the way in. They're not going to go halfway. They're not just going to send one guy in and then the second guy stays too high and actually doesn't actually do anything. They go out and set the tone for the rest of the team, because we all know that the Golden Knights have really struggled coming out of the gates to start games, or just out of periods in general. And so that tone setter that we saw in the first period that worked out so well and set them up for a really good start to that game. The third period, however, as I said, that goal was scored just less than a minute and a half in. And the nature of that goal really puts the Golden Knights on their heels in terms of where they're feeling confidence-wise. Because as I said, Marc-Andre Fleury hasn't had the strongest of his seasons, but he's dealing with a lot off the ice as well. But the way that play kind of started to happen is that Marc-Andre Fleury makes a great initial save on the pass across, but then he overslides just a little bit to his glove side. And then remember, goalies, this is a game of micro inches, because our crease really isn't that big. But if you move a foot, that's going to create a really weird angle for shooters to either shoot at or create rebounds in areas, or at least openings for it to put rebounds in that normally aren't there, that shouldn't be there. And that is exactly what happened on that goal, at least that first goal to open up the third period. From there, it really puts the Golden Knights, like I said, on their heels. Zach Whitecloud, who has played very well in his limited time here with the Golden Knights since being called up, he takes a double minor. Obviously, high sticking, there's blood, you get 4 minutes instead of two. If there's no blood, just 2 minutes. But by putting his team, and not his fault, in that type of penalty kill situation, obviously Chandler Stephenson goes out and gets a shorthanded goal, which is huge. But that's that top penalty kill unit. They gas their legs, they go out and they kill part of that penalty, and then they send out Nicholas Waugh, Alex Tuck, Nick Holden, and Merrill. And that is just not a penalty kill unit that is going to yield you a lot of results, or at least going to really have a shut down type of shift. And what happened was is that Jake Gardner, the defenseman for the Carolina Hurricanes, threads the needle to a pass cross zone to Eric Holla, who we're all very familiar with, very skilled player. But everybody is literally watching the puck. Everybody is moving back, and no one is actually proactively forechecking or pressuring any of those players. Eric Holla breaks free, makes one little move to his backhand because he's left-handed, and just slides one right under Marc-Andre Fleury. So now that's two goals in which we're not used to seeing against Marc-Andre Fleury go in. And we were previewing this a little bit on the playmakers earlier, but goaltending, obviously your job is to stop the puck. That is your number one thing. But goalies are the barometers for the team's confidence level, for how they're feeling about themselves. If you see a chaotic goaltender in your crease, you're often going to see chaotic play from the team in front of you. And that's exactly what happened and what kind of devolved in that third period. Because once that Holla goal goes in, you all of a sudden see guys like Max Pacioretty, like Cody Eakin, running around in the zone on the next goal against, where literally you had three forwards on the same side. And this isn't even a PK, but it sure looks like it. But Fleury, who's obviously a little bit disheveled, a little bit distracted, tries to push one of the Carolina players out of his way and ends up getting scored on as a result. Now, the goal was waved off initially, but the Carolina Hurricanes challenged it, and it was the right challenge because Marc-Andre Fleury was actually the one interfering with the Carolina player rather than the Carolina player interfering with Marc-Andre Fleury. And when you're a goalie and you're worried about what's going on in front of you in terms of the players, I need to move this guy, I'm really annoyed with this, why can't we do this? Your mind is already completely off what your true task is. And as I said literally minutes ago, it's about the puck. And when you're getting distracted, when you're focusing on those other things, that's going to show up in the team in front of you. And that's exactly what happened. And it just completely devolved from there. So where do we go from here? How do we get over this? How many more times are we going to see this? Because I feel like this has happened a few times. This team just has a tendency to give up goals in bunches. Well, you're going to have to start playing better defensively. You're going to have to get that puck-moving defenseman in the trade deadline coming up here because the Golden Knights have so much trouble getting out of the zone efficiently, getting the good breakouts. And the more time you spend in that D zone, that means more time that you're obviously not putting time and effort in the offensive zone where it's fun to play hockey, but rather you're doing stops and starts, just slogging it through, getting hit, and having the opposition's will imposed upon you in your defensive zone. And that's just something that's not only going to wear down your players, but it's going to wear down your goaltender. So it's a catch 22 because for the team to play better, you need better play from Marc-Andre Fleury. To get better play from Marc-Andre Fleury, you also have to get better defensive play. And all of these things feed into one another. It's a very complicated problem, one that Peter DeBoer and Kelly McCrimmon and the rest of the Golden Knights front office, I'm sure, is grappling with because they do find themselves, as we always say, in one of the most contentious division battles that we've seen in a long while. The Golden Knights right now are third place in the Pacific Division with 64 points. Vancouver is at the top at 65 points. Second place, Edmonton Oilers. The only reason why they're ahead of us is because in point percentage, which I don't understand because math's hard. But then you have the Winnipeg Jets at 63 points and the Calgary Flames at 62. And that's the line. Once you get past those two teams, you're on the outside looking in. So you're literally 3 points from the outside looking in. So that lost point that you gave up in that comeback, in that shootout loss against Carolina Hurricanes, that stuff matters. That's why we harp on it every day in the Playmakers, every Monday, 6 to 7 here on the Nightcap. Every single one of these points are going to matter for your Golden Knights. And sooner or later, they're going to need to find a way to close out games, to play 60 minutes consistently. Because if they don't, even if they make the playoffs, they're not going to go very far. There's going to be plenty to explore in the coming weeks as we move towards those Stanley Cup playoffs. And as we move, we're only 14 days away from that trade deadline. But trades really got kicked off literally 20 minutes ago. It's time for us to take our first intermission. When we come back, we are joined by Ryan Quigley. Spends his time covering the Minnesota Wild. So we are very fortunate to be finding this timing here. So, as I said, on the other side of the rig, we have Ryan Quigley. My name is Lindsay Brown. This is the Nightcap live on CBS Sports Radio on 1140 and streaming on the radio.com app. Unfortunately for the rest of y'all, I'm way better than the best of all. And even though they focus on just the flaw, they're still going to... CBS
Sports Radio. Sending you off to the naughty chair. It's the Nightcap on CBS Sports Radio 1140.
And welcome back to the Nightcap. As we kick off the second portion of the show, I would like to remind you that it's super, super easy to listen back to this very show, a past episode, whatever Nightcap content, hockey content, anything I've done, you can find that on CBS Sports Radio 1140 on the radio.com app. You just have to search out the, yes, include the V, Nightcap, and you can subscribe. You can also do that on Apple Podcasts, subscribe there, leave reviews, because, you know, we all need constructive criticism once in a while, or compliments, those work too. But as I said, find it, subscribe it, just listen to all of it, consume it, live it. And speaking of someone who really lives hockey and lives the Minnesota Wild specifically, today and tonight, we are the triumphant return of one man, myth, legend, the only person who might be louder than me, Ryan Quigley, joins the program. Ryan.
That's right. Thank you so much for having me, Lindsay. It's good to be back on the show.
I know. It's been a while since we've heard from you, and that's what I want to address because we haven't really talked about it here on the show. So before we get into this huge trade that obviously just happened, we're going to get all into that. But what's going on with you? What's changed? Why aren't you here?
Yeah, so basically I got a new gig covering the Minnesota Wild, and I was getting paid a little more for it. And so I decided, you know what, I'm gonna focus on that. So I was doing it remotely, and a lot of my family's back on the East Coast, and so I figured if I can do it remotely, I might as well go back to where all my people are. So, I wanted to come back here, and it's good to be home. It's good to see all my friends and family again.
Absolutely. I'm glad that we're able to reconnect, and I'm glad that this actually worked out so well, and I had a bunch of questions ready to go.
It worked beautifully.
Yes.
This really is perfect.
Absolutely. So let's dive into that trade, shall we? Because the Golden Knights are going to be facing off against the Minnesota Wild tomorrow night. But the Minnesota Wild arguably just made one of the most important trades in their franchise history. And Paul asked me during this, before we get into the questions, let's lay this thing out. Who was traded to who and why, Ryan?
Yeah. All right. So the Minnesota Wild have traded Jason Zucker. Native of Las Vegas, by the way. Not native. He's from Newport Beach, but he grew up in Vegas. traded him to the Pittsburgh Penguins for Alex Galchenyuk, a first-round draft selection in the 2020 draft this summer, and prospect defenseman Kalen Addison. So that's pretty much what happened in the trade there. And, I mean, honestly, the writing's been written on the wall here for a while. I mean, even last summer, Jason Zucker's name was kind of in the middle of trade talks. He almost got traded to Pittsburgh.
That's right.
Phil Kessel.
Mm-hmm.
And then, here's the funny part. Not only did that not happen, but then the Penguins traded Kessel to the Arizona Coyotes for Alex Galchenyuk.
That's right.
And now, Galchenyuk going to the team that originally was supposed to get Kessel. So it's a whole circle of life type thing.
Circle of life. That's brilliant.
Yeah.
And Paul and I were kind of talking about this because this broke within the hour. And he asked me, who won this trade? But for me, this trade seems almost mutually beneficial considering where Minnesota is at in terms of their cap space, in terms of their team construction. Do you share in my opinion, or do you think one side is getting a little bit more than the other in this deal?
Right. I do think it's pretty even for the most part. I think Zucker is definitely the better player compared to Galchenyuk. I know a couple of years ago, people were considering him one of the best young players in hockey.
Mm-hmm.
And his play has just kind of fallen off a little bit recently. But no, I like the trade for Minnesota. I don't think it's really a robbery for either side, because at the end of the day, Minnesota is getting a first-round pick. Now, granted, it's going to be a late first-round pick because
sure.
The Penguins are pretty good. So, I mean, but luckily for them, this is a really, really deep draft class this year.
Mm-hmm.
So even a late first round draft pick can still land a pretty good young player in the first round. And then they got this young kid, Kalen Addison, who is he's doing pretty good. He's averaging a point per game in the WHL right now with the Hurricanes. So Lethbridge Hurricanes. So no, he seems like he's a pretty good, and he's a defenseman. Point per game for a defenseman is pretty good. So it's good to see that development coming out of him right now. And there's a whole lot to unpack with this thing. But I do agree. I don't think there's any clear cut winner here.
Absolutely. And I like this trade for Minnesota because you're getting a player that's going to play now, a player that could be part of your future in Kalen Addison. And then that first round pick, it is protected in the unlikelihood that the Pittsburgh Penguins miss the playoffs. You don't trade for Jason Zucker because right. You're on the edge of that glory. But mm-hmm. In terms of getting that first round pick, because the Wild's farm system has been so depleted over the better part of this last decade, because they were buyers at pretty much every single trade deadline because they thought they were one of those teams that was just one player away from contending. So in your mind, Ryan, does this trade finally signal the Wild organization's commitment to the long overdue rebuild? And how is that going to affect the team tomorrow night when they face off against the Vegas Golden Knights? Because this is a trade, like you said, that's been rumored for a long time, but it's finally happened.
Right. Yeah. No, I think this is definitely the kind of trade that does signal the start. I want to say rebuild, but I don't know if that's even the proper wording for it, just because you know how GMs do it. They're always like, oh, this is not a rebuild. This is retooling is what it is. It's
retooling.
Like, no, it's not a rebuild. But no, I do think this is a signal that, hey guys, just FYI, lots of big changes are coming ahead. So just prepare yourselves. And you know what? Their game against the Colorado Avalanche yesterday, I kind of thought was going to be the signal for, I thought that game was going to hold a lot of weight for what Bill Guerin was going to do at the trade deadline, because this was kind of their opportunity to say, hey Bill, like, we're taking on the Colorado Avalanche at home. This is mm-hmm. in Minnesota. Like, maybe we can take down one of the better teams in hockey. They're one of the best teams in the West. If we can take them down, then this should signal to you, we like our team right now, keep the gang together, and we can try and make a push here. And they just couldn't do it. You know, they got subpar goaltending from Devin Dubnyk. And
shocking.
For the most part, I thought the team played pretty well, but you know, it's things like that. It really, what it comes down to is being realistic. And the realism here is that they are not a contender right now.
Right. And so it seems like they're finally committing to that. And so now that this trade has been made, now that they've kind of self-designated themselves into the seller's market, into the I'm not going to really push for the playoffs at this point, based off of what you've seen over the last couple of weeks for the Minnesota Wild, because the last time Vegas faced them, it was down here, and the Minnesota Wild were actually playing a lot better and surging a little bit. That kind of got them into the race in general because they had such a poor start to the season. What's it been like over the last couple of weeks for this team, and where's their mindset at?
You know what? I actually thought the last couple of weeks were pretty positive because yesterday they had, I mean, they just snapped a 3-game winning streak yesterday, which, I mean, that's not great, but I mean, they had a nice little run there and they were playing some legitimately good hockey. Like, they played a game against the Dallas Stars a couple days ago where I thought they played very well. They played well against the Blackhawks not too long ago. So, and granted, the Blackhawks are nothing special. It's not exactly a high bar to beat the Blackhawks. But,
yeah,
I thought that this team was kind of on the upswing a little bit, which I didn't necessarily think was the smartest idea, at least for in terms of – because I do think this is kind of – the move that was necessary. And so I was worried in a way about if they keep winning here, I wonder if they're going to still make these changes that need to be made. And I guess yesterday's loss to Colorado was, it kind of broke the camel's back. And so Bill Gann said, all right, I have a good table or a good trade on the table here. I might as well go for it.
Right. So this is probably going to be a team that's going to be in a little bit of a defensive, at least mentally defensive mode tomorrow night when they face off against the Golden Knights. But the Golden Knights, as you know, you spent a lot of time down here, are in a pretty crazy battle in the Pacific Division, and their every single point matters. And for me, tomorrow night's matchup against the Minnesota Wild is about as close to a must-win as you could have at this point of the season, considering right. The slate of opponents that they have coming up. St. Louis, the Islanders, the Capitals. You have all of these teams coming into the T-Mobile Arena over the next couple weeks. But to take a little bit of a local angle, at least here and in Minnesota, how's our favorite underappreciated blue liner, a.k.a. Double Sevs, a.k.a. Brad Hunt? I saw that he was scratched the other night, but like, what's going on with him and what's changed up there in terms of him playing a significant defensive role for the Minnesota Wild?
Brad the Hitman Hunt. He's
yeah.
doing pretty well. He did have that healthy scratch a couple of days ago, so that's not obviously a great sign, but I do think he has carved out a pretty solid little decent role with the Wilds. He's playing some pretty significant power play time. He's excellent on the power play. I'm surprised he didn't get more time on the power play in Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, they have Theodore and Nate Schmidt. Like, they have a little more offensive firepower on the back end there. I think he's kind of carved out a nice niche with this team. And I don't know if he has carved out a place in the long-term future, but I don't think they would be wrong to bring him back. I think he's had a pretty good year for the most part. Nothing perfect at all by any means, but I think the people up in Minnesota really, really like him. They love his character. I mean, mm-hmm. there's no questioning, Brad Hunt the person. He's a great guy. But the player, he does have some, kinks that need to be worked out. But I do think he's kind of, he's done a good job in Minnesota so far.
Absolutely. I think everybody here in the Vegas area knows how good of a guy Brad Hunt is. And obviously, I watched him a little bit before I left Minnesota. Like you said, he has some offensive upside, and it's sneaky because he's small. And another small player that the Minnesota Wild have that has come on as of late is Kevin Fiala. And he was a trade deadline acquisition last year. He was sent in exchange for Mikhail Granlund for Nashville and has shown flashes of brilliance over the course of his time in Minnesota. But now he has 4 goals in his last 4 games. I saw the walk or the dangle job that he did against the Colorado Avalanche the other night. What's going right in Kevin Fiala's game right now, and how worried should the Vegas Golden Knights be about keeping him contained tomorrow night in Minnesota?
Yeah, he's been one of the few shining lights on this team so far. He's been excellent the last, really, I want to say since November. He's been one of the best, most productive point getters in the NHL, really, since November started. His first month of the season was not good, but he got acclimated, and he's been truly phenomenal ever since. I do think he's going to pose some problems for the Golden Knights tomorrow just because he's so hard to contain. He's so quick. He's so fast. Like, once he gets going, if he gets a full head of steam in the neutral zone, you might as well just count it as a high danger scoring chance from that point forward. I mean, he's so good at creating quality scoring chances, and he's just got the hot hand right now. He's a very, very good player, and I think right now he's proving to the Wild, like, hey, I know these changes are coming, not for me. Like, you guys need me now, because they haven't had a guy like Kevin Fiala in a while, and I think everyone in Minnesota's just as relieved, really, as I am to see someone stepping up and being this quote-unquote star player for the Wild.
Yeah, and as you said, last year when he was acquired at the trade deadline, it took him some time to get acclimated. Now, he was a young player when he was acquired, right. But a lot of times those trade deadline deals actually don't work out as well as one could think. But if they have another year or two on that contract, that's where those it's incentivized for teams to go after guys with some time left on their deal. So they have, you know, more than the 2 months that they have for the sprint before the playoffs. Thank you again, Ryan, for joining us. Before I let you go, where can we find all the Minnesota Wild stuff, anything that you do? What's your social? Direct us to your feed.
Well, I'll tell you what, if you want to look up some good Minnesota Wild content, there's only one place to go, folks, and that place is hockeywilderness.com. And on Twitter, you can find it at hockeywilderness with one S, because someone apparently already has hockeywilderness as a handle with a double S. So, okay. And then you can find me on Twitter at the Ryan Quigley.
Thank you so much, Ryan. I miss you dearly, and hopefully
thank you so much. This is so awesome. I really appreciate you having me on.
Absolutely. Anytime. We'll have you on in the future, because we do have a game, another game against the Minnesota Wild, I think, in March, so I'm sure we'll get Ryan back for that. Thanks to Ryan. We're going to take a quick break, and then on the other side, we have our very special Dump and Chase segment that always takes place, or at least we try to have it take place during the 35th minute, because that was my goalie number. That's the best number there is. This is the Nightcap. My name is Lindsay Brown, your host, always and forever. We're on CBS Sports Radio 1140 and streaming on the radio.com app.
The Nightcap. That's a night with a K, as in Golden Knights. Duh. On CBS Sports Radio 1140.
Welcome back to the Nightcap. My name is Lindsay Brown, your host, always and forever. You can find me on Twitter at LindsayBrown35. As Shakira said, you can find us and listen to us whenever, wherever you want on that radio.com app or on Apple Podcasts. Just search out the Nightcap, and you should be able to find any episode, the one we're doing right now, the ones we've done previously, or any hockey things. You can find all of that there. We're going to do something a little bit different for today's show, because I am riding solo like Jason Derulo is. So this final part of the show, which is usually just Dump and Chase, we have made it into a super segment, me and Marcus have, and we're just going to take a little bit of our conversation that I had with Paul Eihan, who joined us on last week's Nightcap, which you can find on all those feeds I just previewed, and just kind of discussing Saturday's loss against the Carolina Hurricanes, what's going on in the heads of the Golden Knights, what's going on in the heads of Marc-Andre Fleury, and just kind of trying to break that down and try to make sense of a loss that really didn't make much sense. So here's that conversation from the Playmakers earlier.
Your Vegas Golden Knights apparently are going to be buyers, right, Lindsay? We're going to be buying defense here in the next 2 weeks. This is going to happen.
Yes, it needs it clearly, and it's something that we've been talking about for weeks. And now that we're in the official 2 week or inside of that, these talks are going to get hotter and hotter, and you're going to see other teams obviously engaging in their own trade talks. And when other teams start making moves, sometimes that incentivizes or at least forces you into the conversation a little bit quicker than you previously thought. So it's going to be hot stuff.
So you look at the performance over the weekend as the Knights come back home and did not do as well as they didn't finish as well as they started. It was a third period that left a lot of fans and a lot of pundits scratching their heads going, What exactly happened?
Yeah, they just didn't play 60 minutes. They came out and they set the tone early. They were able to get some goals going in that first period and had built up a 3-1 lead going into the third period. And then all of a sudden, you blink. The Carolina Hurricanes get a goal about a minute 19 into that third period. And then it was just truly your hair was on fire the rest of the period with a lot of penalty kill time. And it just before you know it, it's 5-5 and you're in a shootout that you can't score in, and you're losing a game that you should have won. You get a point, but we talk about every day, every single point matters. You lost one of those points that mattered on Saturday night.
And we talk about must wins inside of the last 2 months of the regular season here as we watch this count away. So as you examine that game on Saturday, and the team has a day off today before they go back on the road to take on the Wild tomorrow, as you examine that game on Saturday night, really what went wrong? I mean, if you could break it down for us goal by goal, Lindsay, what went wrong for the Knights and what happened when I always call it the quicksand.
Yep.
You know, one thing goes wrong, you try to correct it, you make the correction, but you overcorrect, or something bad happens, and then you give up another goal,
mm-hmm.
and then another,
yep.
and then another,
yep.
and then all of a sudden you find yourselves, instead of staring at a lead, staring at a deficit, or trying to claw back again for that 1 point.
Right. Mistakes do have a tendency to compound on top of themselves, don't they? Especially with this Golden Knights team. And in terms of how that third period went so south so quickly, is that first goal that I had mentioned just a couple of minutes ago, just a minute 19 into the period. And Marc-Andre Fleury makes a very good save on the initial shot, but that rebound pops out to the corner because Marc-Andre Fleury is a very aggressive goaltender, one that tends to go out towards the puck when he does like to attack it. That took him away from the post. And when you're a goaltender, your anchors for everything, for where you're standing, for all of your angles, and that goaltending strictly, purely geometry and playing those angles, he wasn't able to get back to that post. And all of a sudden, he's in no man's land. And so this kind of crappy goal gets batted behind him across his toes. And when you see Marc-Andre Fleury kind of flopping around like that, as a goaltender, you're a barometer for your team. How you're playing, how you're approaching it, whether you're, if you're calm, if you're panicky, if you're, you know, a little bit anxious, it has a tendency to be kind of make its waves through the rest of the team. And as that goal was scored, you obviously had a penalty being taken on that as well. So you have Chandler Stephenson, who made a great play and a great read to score that shorthanded goal. But that double minor that Zach Whitecloud took, which happens once in a while, you know, you hit somebody up in the face, if they bleed, that's 4 minutes instead of two. If they don't bleed, it's only 2 minutes. But that's a long kill, a really long kill. So after Chandler Stephenson goes on and scores that goal, that top PK unit is gassed, right? So they go to the bench. So on that third goal that Carolina scored, their first power play goal, you had Alex Tuch, Nick Holden, Merrill, and Nick Waugh on the ice. Those are not our typical penalty killers.
Not the murderer's row of penalty
right.
kill for
Absolutely.
The Knights.
And they're great players, but nonetheless, that's not your penalty killing unit. And they got caught sleeping in the neutral zone, where you had Jake Gardner for the Carolina Hurricanes threading a needle towards Eric Holla. We're very familiar with that face,
yes,
in this
indeed.
Town. And the way that goal was scored, too, was not the best goal to give up for Marc-Andre Fleury. I mean, Holla, being left-handed, makes one little move, puts it to his backhand, and just basically slides it five hole. And once you see these goals and the way the nature of these goals are being scored, that's not the Marc-Andre Fleury that we're used to having. And you see him sometimes have the propensity to kind of spin out, because, like I said, he's an aggressive goaltender. He wants to win. He wants to play, and he wants to make sure that he's doing everything he possibly can to get in front of those pucks. But now that he's kind of spinning, that next goal that was scored from the corner, the one that was almost waved off, that was waved off initially, and then Carolina challenged it because it seemed like the Carolina player had interfered with Marc-Andre Fleury, but it was actually Marc-Andre Fleury interfering with the Carolina player. And once you're in that mindset as a goaltender, once you're worrying about what's going on in front of you, with a player in front of you trying to get him out of the way, that's when you know you're not in your right headspace. You're focusing on the stuff that is not the puck, and that is your only focus on your goaltender, is finding that puck. And by focusing on that player, he was a split second late to react, and he went into a slide across, and that puck went short side because he was too late to see where that puck was at. And so you just saw this kind of storm and the team kind of respond, where you see guys running around. There's no defensive kind of structure. You have all three forwards on one side in the defensive zone, which is not what you want to see. And when that happens, guys get lost, guys get open, and that's how you blow a 3-1 lead going into the third period and finding yourself on the bad end of a shootout. So it's a tough period. It's a tough game, especially for it being the first game that Pierre DeBoer was here behind the bench, the first game that we've seen them here in over a month. Definitely doesn't inspire, you know, a lot of confidence. That's, I think, their fourth straight loss at home now. So, but you have to put it behind you. You have to move on and hope to just chalk that up as to being a really weird, like 20 to 30 minutes of your ice time. But nonetheless, like I said, that point that they lost, that they gave away to Carolina, that's a huge, huge point. Because if you haven't seen the standings as of late, Paul, the Golden Knights are third in the Pacific Division right now with 64 points. Vancouver's at the top with 65. Edmonton, we're tied with 64 points. But Winnipeg and Calgary are right below us at 63 and 62. So that line on the outside looking in is only 2 points away. And so you think we could use that extra point?
Well, absolutely. And you talk about how tight this Western Conference is. We've had this consistent conversation, Linz, about how tight the division is and where the team falls inside and outside of the division. And we see, good things happen and bad things happen to rivals across, you know, across the across the Western Conference. And we see a couple of defenders go down today. Goalie in Arizona with Kuemper. Columbus now also losing out on, I'm looking at the name here, Jones, who's out indefinitely with an ankle.
That's huge.
Right, with an ankle injury. He was injured over the weekend. He was actually placed on IR.
Yeah.
So now there's another team looking for defense.
Well,
and defenders, again, we talk about first-line guys mm-hmm. and having to, you know, trade out, you know, first-line guys if there's this, all of a sudden there's now this need.
Right.
And the price is going to go up.
Well, especially for a team like Columbus that kind of finds itself in the middle, but weirdly in the mix, especially after last year, you know, they really went for it by trading for Matt Duchene. They had Artemi Panarin. They had Sergei Bobrovsky. We've seen all of those players this year. All three of those players are now on different teams. And so for them to lose Seth Jones at this point, that might put Columbus into a point where maybe they were buyers before and they might be a little more like sellers. But there are teams that are so dependent on one guy. And so that's why this next week or so is going to be really big to really set the market, because especially in the Western Conference, you have so many teams that are right near that cutoff line for the playoff position, like Chicago, like Nashville, teams like this, where they've been hanging around because everybody just beats up on each other. But sooner or later, the deadline's going to be here. So where you are about next week, that's when really a lot of these teams are going to say, okay, this is what we are going to do. We are buyers or sellers, or we're going to go for this type of defenseman, or we're going to go to this type of forward. But you're absolutely right. An injury like Seth Jones really throws quite a big key into the grander scheme of motion in terms of the trade deadline, because now you have some teams who are dealing with injured players might be looking for players that they weren't even thinking about for the entire season. So more competition means the prices are going to go up. And it makes it tougher for the Golden Knights to do, because they only have like what, $750,000 in cap space right now. It's not a lot to work with.
Yeah, we're pretty limited on the cap here in terms of just dollars and cents that make any sense whatsoever, with the number is 750 essentially.
Right on.
Not a big number. Enough to make a move, though.
You're going to have to move money out.
Right,
that's
no, for sure.
Do,
yeah, for sure. They're going to have to do that. And then the news today, you know, I mentioned the goalie in Arizona.
Darcy
Kuemper actually re-injured himself in warm-ups today.
Yeah.
So Ronta will start again, but now there's perhaps a movement, knowing that we just talked about teams stuck in that little wild card kind of back and forth, struggling for points, where now they may be in the market for a veteran goalie like a Miller out of Anaheim.
100%. And that's the thing, too, is that things have changed, and that's a direct competition with the Golden Knights. And sometimes I've kind of danced around the last couple weeks. Sometimes you make trades for players just so other teams don't get those players. And so that might force at least the goaltender, if that's something that is a very realistic option for the Golden Knights, one that they've been pursuing, that might be all of a sudden we'll see a goaltending trade before we'll see a defenseman trade. I don't know. We'll see. But that just shows you, up to the minute at this point, when you're getting this close to the trade deadline, and we see a lot of injuries at this point of the year, because we're kind of, you know, not quite two-thirds of the way there, but enough to have bumps and bruises to really start to bog guys down, where they could get that major injury like Seth Jones, where it just is a freak thing, or guys have to sit out. Like we just heard William Karlsson, who has been out for a while. I think he's going to be returning for the Golden Knights tomorrow night in Minnesota. Broken finger. Like, he was at practice this morning. He looks good. But those are the types of little things where all of a sudden 4 to 6 weeks, there's not that many weeks left. And so you gotta make sure that you can cover your losses if you're one of those teams kind of hanging around playoff contention.
And the Knights don't have that many more games to evaluate the team. At least Pete doesn't have that chance to see it in person. McCrimmon will, obviously, because he's seen this team play the entire year. But there are seven more games before the trading deadline.
Yeah.
The team that shows up at the Fortress on the 22nd against Florida may not be the same team when they return here 5 days later, because they hit the road for a quick back-to-back in Anaheim.
Yeah.
If they wait till that long to make a deal, if it happens, it will be a decidedly different team. That just goes without saying.
Right.
But it's defense that we've continued to say that this team needs. And when it comes to everybody playing in front of Fleury or Malcolm, they're facing more and more and more shots, because they're playing against teams that are gunning for the Knights, knowing that if they take the Knights down, they're grabbing the much-needed points. They're teams that are finding themselves in those same situations, in terms of this isn't a win that we need to get over a monster opponent to prove that we can beat a monster opponent. This is a team that we can legitimately beat because they need the points as badly as we do.
Right.
And so I think you're seeing teams pressing even more so against the Knights, even before the last couple of years. Last couple of years, the Knights were a fairly elite team. Mm-hmm. Surprisingly, in year one, solid in year two, but now in year three, they've fallen back a little bit again in that mix.
Right.
But teams have a different motivation to get the wins against the Knights, I think, this time around.
Well, and the Knights have shown that they can easily be beaten. It's pretty much always the same story when it comes to these losses. It's either, you know, we give up a bunch of goals at the beginning, we give up a bunch of goals at the end of the game. We can't get the puck out of our own zone. When you have those tendencies, this is a professional hockey league. These people are like, this is their job to figure out how they can beat you night in and night out. And when it's, you're not able to get that puck out and you're not able to play good defense and get that puck out of the zone so you don't have to spend as much time and energy and those heavy legs stopping and starting to go up and down the D zone. Like, it's an easy game plan to go in. And so until either the players on the roster start to play a different way, or maybe we tinker around with those defensemen a little bit more, I don't know what else more you could do. But just straight up, it's an easy game plan for most of these opposing teams, either coming into T-Mobile or on the road, because the Golden Knights haven't really established a stronghold of a type of player or a style of play. They've shown that they can be poked and prodded into submission, even if they're able to build up a big lead. But so there's just multiple ways you can beat this team. So they need to start taking away some of these options by doing that, by getting a puck moving defenseman who can help mitigate a lot of the minutes, much like Chandler Stephenson did when they traded for him earlier on this season. Remember that line that I told you about earlier of Tuck, Holden, Roy, Hold, and Merrill? If you have that defenseman, you don't have to worry about a grouping like that, because then you're like, oh, well, if Nate Schmidt is up here, then you're Brady McNabb. Okay, now you're on the second pair, so we can put you out there instead. And that makes a world of a difference. And no offense to Holden or Merrill, but they're not Brady McNabb and Nate Schmidt. And so by adding that defenseman, that helps you mitigate those minutes and allocate them in different ways and get you playing a different style of hockey that's not going to be as easily as solvable as they have been as of late.
We look at the goalies between Marc-Andre and Malcolm, and there was an interesting stat in The Athletic that you brought to my attention that this year, in terms of numbers, we talked to McKenna about this too when mm-hmm. we've had him on the show about what he feared the most when you had a rush coming at you, whether it was just mm-hmm. a one-on-one and you were okay with trying to face the triple deke or whatever it was, or if it was a two-on-one. And the stats suggest, at least this year, that goalies are having much more trouble dealing with two-on-ones than they are just a breakaway goal. It seems like every time I see a breakaway goal, at least in front of our goalies, we're snagging everything that's being shot at them.
Right. When it comes to breakaways or penalty shots or just shootout, you're pretty much looking at about a 51-49. It depends on the shooter. Now, if Alexander Ovechkin's coming down to shoot on you in a breakaway, a little bit different percentage if it is Chandler Stephenson, for example, even though he converted on his breakaway on Saturday. But two-on-ones are a different bit because that gives the offensive team options. And when you're playing goalie, when you have an ensuing two-on-one, what they typically teach is that you want the shooter. You establish with your defenseman. You call out, you communicate, because it's much easier for you to take half of the ice sheet in the defensive zone than it is to have to worry about the whole thing, because it's really tough for goaltenders to make saves while they're moving. We want to make sure the feet are set and that your angle is set, because if you're moving and you try to go down, if your blades aren't dug into the ice,
it's ice.
Your body goes everywhere.
It's
momentum. What
right.
happens to trees when they're up in the wind and they start to big trees fall hard?
Gravity always wins.
Exactly. And so the two-on-one is going to have a higher goal conversion rate than a breakaway, because you have that option, and because not every team, not every defenseman, not every goalie plays two-on-ones, you know, to that thing. It's kind of like blackjack rules. You're like, it's what you should do, but you don't have to. But yeah, it makes total sense why there'd be a higher conversion rate on two-on-ones, especially for the NHL, which is definitely emphasizing odd man rushes by getting rid of the penalty that used to be for like coast-to-coast passes. Or they're trying to make sure that the game incentivizes young, skilled, fast players that are able to create these odd man rushes. So more opportunities, more goals, lots of sharpshooting, lots of skill. That's what you're seeing. And then you add it on top of the difficulty that it is for goaltenders to make saves on the move. Expect two-on-ones, it's usually you're going from one edge of the crease all the way to the other. That's a big push. versus just starting from here and going butterfly to the post on like breakaway. You know what I mean? Does that make sense? You feeling goal lead right now? No. I feel super goal lead right now. You can listen back to that on the Playmakers podcast feed or just use that little rewind feature on that radio.com app. As I said, we kind of smushed two segments together for this week on the Nightcap because I thought that was a really kind of comprehensive look on the game from Saturday and their 6-5 loss to the Carolina Hurricanes, what they're kind of thinking in terms of the trade deadline and where we are in this goaltending situation. But as I said, too, with the trades, we had one made just a little over an hour ago between the Minnesota Wild and the Pittsburgh Penguins. Jason Zucker going to the Pittsburgh Penguins in exchange for Alex Galchenyuk, a 2020 first-round pick, and prospect Kalen Addison. Though Jason Zucker will not be on the ice tomorrow night when those Vegas Golden Knights face off against the Minnesota Wild in St. Paul. That's going to do it pretty much for us here on the Nightcap. The Golden Knights have a couple more games on their docket besides the Minnesota Wild game on Tuesday. They have St. Louis on Thursday and the Islanders on Saturday. This is about as big of a must-win game as it seems like for against the Minnesota Wild because of the opponents that the Golden Knights have on their slate. Like I said, St. Louis, a team that they went down 3-0 to and came back and won in overtime, which is great. But those leads, those comebacks are few and far between in terms of converting and coming back to win those. And the Islanders are doing a pretty good job. And I think they secured a win over the Washington Capitals. And that is a team that is playing incredibly well. So points are important. That is the lesson. That is the name of the game for the Nightcap, which is always 6 to 7 p.m. right here on CBS Sports Radio 1140 and streaming on that radio.com app. My name is Lindsay Brown, your host always and forever. We'll be back next week and every week after. Cheers to you, cheers to me, and cheers to us and all will be. We'll see you next week.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.